And Erica, we'll have roll call, please.
Alcalian de Vanacuilla Indian. City of Life. City of Cathedral City.
Here.
City of Coachella. Desert Healthcare District. City of Desert Hot Springs. City of Indian Wells.
Present.
City of India.
Present.
City of La Quinta.
Present.
City of Palm Desert.
Present.
City of Palm Springs.
Here.
City of Rancho Mirage.
Present.
Riverside County.
Here.
Torres Martinez, Desert Cuya Indian. Here we have one.
Thank you. And it looks like Desert Hot Springs just stepped into the room. So we know for the record that Janet has arrived.
And Chair, we do have the City of Life has just joined us as well.
Okay. Good morning, Johnny. How are you?
Good morning, sir. Thank you. I'm doing well.
And
just for the record, we do have a virtual option. So if anybody in is watching the meeting and wants to raise their hand, we would accept public comment there as well.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to committee chair and CBAC staff now.
I'm asking that you speak into your mics.
Okay. Yeah, please turn on your mics and until the green light goes on and you're free to go. Any committee comments? We did that. Any staff announcements?
Yes, good morning. Better, Joanna. Okay, I'm getting the yes. Good morning, committee members. Thank you all for being here today. As the chair mentioned, we're having a little bit of technical issues this morning, but we are using the OWLs, just so you know, and this is being live streamed to make it accessible. Director Rogers is attending as an attendee today, but is just for the record, watching the meeting. And I did want to just provide you all with an update to item 7C, which is an information item in your packet that talks about member contributions. Very exciting that last week, both the City of Coachella and the City of Palm Springs approved MOUs for the CB Housing First program. The tracker is in there. Many of your other cities have also done that. And last night, the City of La Quinta also voted to provide a contribution this year. So we are well on our way to another year of full support from our member cities, which we greatly appreciate.
Thank you. We'll move on to the consent calendar. I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar if there aren't any changes.
So moved.
Second, and you.
There's a motion of second. Do you roll call or can we?
You can just ask for a vote.
Okay, please, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? The abstention. Thank you. Carries. And move on to item 6A, which is our discussion of the annual report.
Good morning, Chair and Council members. My name is Anya Cora, the Deputy Director of Housing and Workforce Solutions, and I oversee our homeless continuing care division. We are the entity responsible for coordinating the employment grant and responsible alongside each of their cities, in addition to other community-based and faith-based organizations who come alongside us and meet with us regularly to coordinate human services across the entire community. I'm here to provide you with an overview of the homeless point of time count results. We presented the results for the first time last week to the county board of supervisors, and we are now beginning to meet with different regional bodies, cities, and groups to release the results and talk about some of the early investments that we are coordinating to support the funds and the So on this slide, you will see that this year we identified a total of 3,725 individuals across the county who were either living on the streets or staying at a shelter throughout our region. This total represents a 12% increase from last year. And broken down includes 2,431 individuals who were in shelter, engaged by a volunteer the day of the change, and either participated in the survey or when they were in the observation. The other 584, as I mentioned earlier, were individuals who were either staying in shelter that coordinates clients and owners in our homeless management information system, and that HMIS, which CVAC participates in, or either were staying at a DV shelter, a domestic violence shelter, or another shelter that was willing to give us that we can get data full account of the full number of people who are receiving shelter services. We want to highlight that this year we saw a 3% decrease in the rate at which homelessness is growing. In 2022, we saw a 15% increase. This year, we saw a 12% increase. So the 3% decline very much speaks to our efforts in managing the problem. And as I speak today, talk about the different investments that we are coordinating together along with your council, and we will be able to really recognize that there's a lot of good work happening, and that the impact could have been a lot higher. Just to compare, we know that San Bernardino had an overall increase of 26% in the homeless funding time count. Bern County had an increase of 22%. San Diego should be releasing the results later this month, but we know that it is very likely that their numbers will be higher, and Los Angeles is expecting to release the results in June. Orange County did not conduct a count this year. They do a count every other year, which aligns with the HUD mandate, and is a practice that the county is looking to follow beginning in 2021. So, as I said, we do make plans for facilitating a count in 2024. Our next full count will be in 2025. And the reason for this is because we really want our patients, now that we have this data, to be used in planning and to provide our student outreach teams with the tools they need to focus on helping people. And I hope that back in 2025, we will be able to see more positive results demonstrating that we are really wanting to on this next slide, you'll see that when we do the counts, we collect a lot of information. And one of the things that we really like to focus on, of course, is why people are experiencing homelessness in the first place. And what we learned is that the three primary factors were really tied to an economic barrier. 27% of the people that we surveyed described experiencing homelessness due to family dysfunction. And this very much speaks to a loss of income in the family that sometimes is due to the loss of a loved one, usually a kind of household who is the person that is maintaining the rent, bringing income, and being able to maintain the rent, but also as a result of domestic violence issues that can for the family. Secondly, we know that life addiction continues to be a factor in why people cannot afford housing, and then lastly, unemployment at 12%. The other thing that we learned is that 21% of the people that we surveyed across the entire county were experiencing homelessness for the first time. The 21% mirrors what we saw last this year from the Department of Public Health, and we think that this is very much tied to what we saw in 2020 and 2021 when a lot of homeowners were selling their rental homes, which forced a lot of families into homelessness. This next slide, you'll see that we've broken out the population totals to look at how we are addressing homelessness for specific vulnerable populations. You'll see that overall, we saw an increase in the number of veterans who experience homelessness. And we know that on a national level, the increasing rates of veterans who experience homelessness is often tied to the trauma that they experience while in service. And so we're working very closely with the VA and the USVS to ensure that, in addition to pathways to housing that are often coordinated in the VA and women in the hospital, that we are cultivating other access points. And we'll share two additional access points that we were able to coordinate with the community as a result of this increase. Secondly, our state outreach team have been reporting that they're identifying more families with children who are living in their vehicles. So this increase of 12% in the number of families who are experiencing homelessness really came of no surprise. I do want to note that the number of unsheltered families that we identified were 11 households. The vast majority are already in shelters, which is good. And talk a little bit more about the pathway that is listed on this slide. The decrease that we did see was the transition age youth, those that are 18 to 24. And in 2021, the county onboarded a homeless coordinator with experience who has really been working with other systems of care, school districts, and colleges, as well as the foster care system to ensure that we have companies for youth who are at risk and experiencing homelessness. And then for seniors, we know that they continue to be a very vulnerable population. Statistics show very locally that one in eight seniors in our community experience poverty. And then we also have the number of Asian adults in our community also really rapidly. And so we'll see through this one specifically. On this slide, you'll see that I broke out the Coachella Valley results so that you do a snapshot of what each figure looks like through the city. I'll summarize the results speaking to the Coachella Valley as a whole. You'll see that in the Coachella Valley, we saw an overall increase of 5%. Keep in mind that countywide, we saw a 20% increase. The year increase for the Coachella Valley is a little lower. In regards to shelter homelessness, we did see an increase of 14% for 87 individuals. And shelter homelessness decreased by 8% for 33 people. So really resulting in an overall increase in the Coachella Valley in 54 individuals. 54 more people posted this year than last year.
And Tanya, before the audience as well, to explain the shelters.
Absolutely. So those that are sheltered are individuals who are staying either, I'll just give some examples, either at the Child Value Rescue Mission, they may be staying at a shelter from SMAR, Martha's Village and Kitchen, as well as other types of ICE stabilization units, typically in the form of hotel vouchers, sometimes agencies rent out duplexes and use those as temporary loneliness for individuals who are being case managed by homeless assistance providers who continue to work with that individual or their family until they coordinate a permanent housing plan. Usually, the average stay of a shelter is anywhere from 90 to 120 days. We have seen that extended a bit. The last thing I would emphasize is when we can coordinate shelter placements for individuals, it's a good thing. We want this number to go up. In fact, I know that The town has been working very closely with the city of Palm Springs and the Palm Springs Navigation Center. And there's also other efforts coming to the right that might need to speak to in how the county is working to increase the climate change. So the more people shelter, the better. It makes it much easier to coordinate their climate.
Thank you. We have three presentations in the garden to speak. And shockingly, we have a public
we spoke to a lot of the barriers that counties face, in addition to securing stable income and childcare, in addition to childcare being able to meet the medical and nutritional needs that children have, make it much more difficult to be able to afford housing. So I really don't need that.
Absolutely. Therefore,
I broke out among each
question. So we don't have any way of capturing, I mean, the shelter is, you will be in shelter and shelters. But we have any way of capturing people in the situations where we have either, generational people living in a single unit because they have no place. That's another form of shelter. Mm-hmm. Homelessness, they're just not in the
situation. Mm-hmm.
So, great point. This is where we can have the national data. A lot of that is because nerds and school interest and things are actively in the high definition homes that is not. So again, but it is something just for what we want.
Thank you, for the and please feel free to ask questions or raise your hand. Cheryl,
my question follows up on the relationship with schools. My understanding is the definition of homelessness is a state. We don't have to find a patient so as to stay for a family.
And know that I think that to never families who are previously considered in the family situations, each system, I think I can get it from the school district and you. This is about a year behind, but I appreciate the fact that you're bringing up that we're collecting that data because. As we move forward, I think one of the biggest things that really makes it up for us is that the number of people that we are identifying with homeless people is really intended to be just a snapshot. It is not intended to be a full census of how many people are experiencing homelessness in our community. And there's many cities, I know from Palm Springs is currently working through the census of how many people are from shelters, and they found that. The number is higher. In other communities are seeing the same thing. Most housing and more after base will tell you take the point as many people are doing and multiply. And then in a few slides, I'll be able to share with you how many people will see from our communities in the care community, which again is almost 5 times higher. So in addition to the school district data, which is key, I really think that it's important for us to look at ways that we can advocate at federal and state levels and to use these other sets of data to help people in some time. Because right now, most of these methods use the funding method.
You were here,
John.
You had a comment.
I
to this slide, which if I could input out here, that really this program will be this continuing. And so, Sam Bright has done a really good job in providing you guys with an overview of how the homeless continuum of care works. I won't go too much into detail other than to say that the continuum of care and the funding we receive goes out into the community to fund homelessness prevention, food outreach, rental assistance, and other supportive services. However, we very much leverage additional dollars and programs that often fund at the city level, at the regional level, at CBAC, in addition to from community-based organizations who have their own general funds and use those dollars to, for example, designate additional beds for emergency shelters. So, again, the number of people here, which is 14,388, these are unrelated individuals who have been assisted through that entire system here. And again, supported through a variety of different companies. What really stood out to us as we were analyzing this data is the same thing as the previous one. Again, it's not only that this number is 4 to 5 years, but also that we've been able to have almost 625 additional people more this year than last year. So we're doing a lot more. And that is as a result of coordination of companies with Ivan and other staff and CBAC, in addition to other communities that we partner with. So one, we want to highlight that serving 625 people more in 1 year is a really big deal. So moving forward, where we go from here, the most important question, because we don't just like to look at data, we want to take action, is that we have continuing to launch 4 main initiatives. One is Boundless and Playground. In 2016, Riverside County became the first largest county in the entire country to reach functional zero for veterans and business. We know that we can do this again. And so we're partnering with the Melinda, US Vet, Vital Social Services, other veteran providers to set up a strategy in the next couple of months to reach California. We've identified 2 additional access points within that housing authority so that in our Indio office and in Riverside, homeless veterans who need a housing worker can drop in and be assessed on the spot. Previously, they had to be transferred all the way to VA in the So for the first time, now we're going to be able to do this. Secondly, we're continuing a partnership with the Department of Public Social Services so that families who are homeless today can be screened for the COMAR health and safety system. This is a state-funded program that ensures any family who is identified homeless today can be provided with a hotel voucher, a first-floor shelter, and receive on-point rental assistance to help them reach self-sufficiency. The big key to self-sufficiency is they also work with them to gain employment. The third initiative is addressing senior homelessness. And in the last year, the law has changed so that if any senior who is 60 years or older is identified on the streets, you as a council member or any provider can contact the APS hotline. That senior will be linked to an APS social worker, can be dispatched to meet with that person, screen them, and then we allocated funding to also we're very proud about that. We're one of the only counties across the state who has launched that initiative. And lastly, this one is new, and we're getting ready to launch in the next couple of weeks, is that we're expanding our service hours for our street outreach team. Because we recognize that the person's housing crisis, right, isn't restricted to a busy schedule. And oftentimes it's easier to connect with people when they're family in the evening, their campsite where they're going to sleep at the end of the day. Those of us that have done street outreach, you know, sometimes you can spend all day with people, you know. So our street outreach teams I'm going to be available from 5 to 8 p.m. in addition to the business hours.
Shout out to the woman.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Really interesting. I'm happy to see, so, you know, to know your issues. And I just know.
So we actually want screen data delivered to the providers who are contacting our internet companies when they pay business, and also when they survey on the line of the front when we ask questions and the various TV is one of them. The other reason I gave you a full deal is because in our adoption plan, our consumers are identified for the Facebook populations that they wanted to focus on. Of course, not just the other services in effort to really look at the one that has the most significant increase. What we are in the process of producing is that by the end of this month, we're going to have a full report that breaks out with the population data. So we'll be able to see for each of the cities, but then also at a district level, how which subpopulations are experiencing homelessness in the community, with age, race, we just don't have that data ready. We have analysts from researchers who are looking to find the homelessness too. So we'll make sure to contact them to the community. And then to the last question regarding the impact report. We can absolutely export that out to the people in the community. And we may be very happy to answer that question.
And we can include that in the near next agenda packet as well to make sure everybody sees what it is. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for your presentation. First of all, I just want to show appreciation for the expansion of the street outreach. You know, sometimes I like to go out. Six to seven with students, yes, sleeping in the vehicles. It was shocking, but it was also giving back to the school district. This is the city's resources, the school district's also resources for the students. So my appreciation for that. The question is capturing data of folks who originally live in are not part of the site. We know now those are the best. We see a single issue. So just wanted to see if there was and I know there's a lot of work that goes into this, so there's some sometimes want to some of these questions.
Yes, we are. Although I'll have to check, I don't think there's a point of discussion. We asked prior residency that the figures that I showed that have the infographic and display the 14th number, also nothing is there to do with the interpretation of the number. And clients on the road into that system, whether it's providers, the language team, and the system program, one of the questions is where. Where were you living in the area? So they can indicate a zip code, and then they also now are in the city. Some of you guys share the zip code. So we do have the ability to find some information. What we have found is that, and I can say this confidently, and I'll talk about the data, is that 80 to 90% of the people that are affected through our services are from the community. Usually the ones that are coming to us from other regions that are moving here because they see an opportunity as most residents to when they decide to move their family or the next things and what they find is more likely to make a work system. So oftentimes they have to see family here through the different services. There's only about 80 to 90%, and we're looking to add that to my
I appreciate it. The reason why is because we see these numbers grow. Too late. Your dollars are. You can't control increases in homelessness here. I appreciate the work. I think experience.
In regards to the exploitation, our connection teams have labels that they utilize and really have in the most condemned. And talking about stages of the transportation to individuals, they also act as bus counters and station bus counters. And I think what I'll do is based on your experience, is follow up with them to see if that has been a barrier. And if it is, we can work with them to try to solve some additional resources. Our experience has been with the outreach teams who are involved and are able to pick up some documents to learning as well. In regards to undocumented families, I'm so glad that they're doing well. We definitely want to be able to provide more representation of awareness and that individuals know that both federal and state dollars that can be received to administer home assistance programs can be used to provide housing and services to the community. And so, in the same way, the main thing is that we can be responsible to make sure that that information is conveyed out. And then the last one in regards to IDs. So my experience with IDs, I started off as an outreach worker, was that normally if you had an ID, if you had an ID for the state issue for you, when you go to the DMV to apply for another one, normally they do like a temporary ID that you can use to access the policy of the institution. So normally, you can get through the same day. There is a challenge when you have not been issued an ID. So I do know that that's a barrier to see that issue's face. And often, to have to go through, it can take up to several days, and sometimes a couple of weeks. And so I know through that issue's out there, those circumstances, it's kind of reach out. Reaching out to shelter programs to determine if this is might be able to do that. We work hard for like our community shelters to support families. Sometimes, take some of that maybe because when they have to run the girls, they have to look at the safety of all residents. And often, we are comfortable to utilize the families to make the group of people in the community.
The option is actually still working. We're expanding the most important. It's still working. But in addition to the health plans, also we provide transportation. Being an environmental plan, we need to turn up in the room. And as we have that eligibility internet,
so there's different teams that we have there, and if you look on the web page that I provided you with, you'll see that we have contact numbers for each of the agencies.
I'm Lynn Water with the City of Rancho Nashville and I'm in this committee. With regards to ID, and I'm grateful that the Department of Motor Vehicles provides us opportunities, but how many resources out there are our homeless require picture IDs? And does DMV provide picture that we use just the printout? The renewed my driver's license corporation is blurry and does restore last picture.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great issue. My question is, it's a new one and they work on shelter. What is the address of gains? Are they able to use the last shelter that uses their address, or how do we address the transient information?
Seeing individuals sometimes with permission of the shelter is a legal location, but what's most common is that they'll use the local field location, post office location.
One of the reasons that I brought this, I just had to get an extension on my tracker's, and it did not have. So that's what's interesting. I guess maybe it depends on what DMV. Mail it in on time.
Just going to touch on maybe using down because I know for us, So if you use our travel office as the address, but I know these difficulties in the middle of the location, what might be that some places are going to take a travel ID and use the issue. So that is the issue.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Kevin, ready to speak. And we're going to give them plenty of time. So we're going to continue your words until our next meeting because we don't want to just blow through that. We really want to the section. So we're going to continue that item of the meeting until our next meeting. We're going to move on to the landlord incentive program.
And Greg really keep this up a little bit,
talking
about affordable housing and available units. And the item before you was mentioning a couple of the previous reports and alluded to earlier this year as well, when we talked about our challenges with the CD money first program. And with but we do have Ivan, Shakira, and Nora, who are all part of our team and leading us to. And this is the item before you is about trying to secure units. In the Coachella Valley, we have a limited annual supply of units. And when you talk about our particular clients, the choices get even tougher, right? Our clients are going on wait lists along with the average families that are also trying to secure units. When you add in the vouchers that many of our clients are using to pay for these, choices are even more many. And this creates a problem. You've heard our executive director say he is reluctant to increase our program's capabilities. We've had cities, many of your cities, ask if I double my funding, will you increase your program? And we've oddly said, we're not ready to do that. And that's because we know the success of our program and the success of permanently housing individuals depends on units. So what we are ready to propose to you and are recommending is how do we try to get more landlords to look at our clients and accept them. And I use the city of Indio as an example. And this is a real example we just found a couple months ago. We had a client who we found a unit for in the city of Indio. And the rent was $1,900. And the client paid for $1,700. Until we're back to the drawing board. The client within our risk stabilization unit on your CB 200, the unit. So, unfortunately, the rule said you can't just fund the gap, right? Because I'm sure many of you are going, but the vouchers you cannot pay for the gap. What you can do is incentivize landlords to work with them. And this is called a landlord incentive program. And we didn't invent this, we're just copying the programs. City of Riverside uses one, it's described in the fact that the county has one. And what we're recommending is that you offer as executive director to use one of these for our housing risk program. These would be one-time payments, they are not gap funding the home. And it would be an incentive to a landlord of $600 per unit. And when I say existing landlords, it's because many of our clients, we've found landlords that are good partners and they have multiple units and we use them for many of existing landlords. And if there are new landlords who are programmed, we would give them $1,000. They secure the hope that the offer is complete on the line. And we believe we are funding in the budget. We can work this into some line items. If you can do the math, we printed the master for individuals last year. You can quickly add up that it is a relatively nominal cost for our program, but we're hopeful that this starts opening up a pipeline and incentivizing landlords to work with our program, incentivizing landlords to look at the clients, and ultimately starts leading to more inclusive risk. The recommendation is before you. I'm looking to ask any questions. And
questions?
I had a question with regards to the landlords. Are they landlords that own property themselves, or landlords that have managers, or are they LLCs? Because it's corporations owning rental properties. There's just no way they want
generally, we're working on certain making those improvements.
It's
because what we're seeing here again in recent months, I'm a realtor during the day, but what we're
well, if you have available, you can
talk.
We may have an incentive for that.
And I'll pass that along in a study session, Nick. What we're finding there's a case in the Santa Barbara area where you have LLCs that are coming in with multi-unit properties. They're buying up the properties, and there's some legislation that says if you come in and get rid of the popcorn ceilings, update your energy to energy efficient appliances, you can say you're doing a remap. You evict all existing tenants, some of them that have been there for decades, 10, 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And then those landlords or LLCs can increase rent, which is also contributing to homelessness, as it was pointed out earlier. There were over 400 tenants that were given the 60-day notice to vacate up in Santa Barbara last week. Unfortunately, the county supervisors intervened. What basically a stay on that eviction. Where they're coming to a conclusion on that, I don't know at this point in time, but it seems to be a growing trend because of the stories of this happening in the state of Vermont and New Hampshire as well. And so we're having a lot of seniors.
And what's really scary is there are a lot of opportunities that the major LLCs will take on to deal with price setting, to deal with vacancy rates, and actually increasing vacancy rates because of these possibilities. And also, people split it up at first time now, we don't have a lot of those owners of most of it is seen in the really not most of them. But it is becoming an issue for the options.
Gaining a lot of traction just since.
But to Ivy's point, though, at least out here in our room, is that most of ours are either individual owners or property management companies that still are willing to be housed. What you're seeing, just this is a best practice model that's happening across the country, and rental rights rise over the amount of voucher. Again, there's not this work being done. Federal level to increase the balance of now, especially for places like California. But we are seeing that this is a tool that can be used because Erica's point is really important to point out is that by law, we cannot subsidize a voucher for a new system, a new tool that we can use. It is.
And keep in mind, for our units, for the CVAC, crisis stabilization unit, we take the individual in one of our units. The leases in our home, this is our CVAC. We're talking about permanent houses when they come exit our unit to get into their home. And then the leases between the clients and your point is a good one, though. And frankly, we have a really small team, right? We have a really small six. And they spend a lot of time working with landlords and reassuring landlords and getting to landlords. These clients, yes, they have a unique history and they're going to be excellent tenants for you. And that is a work. We've been remarkably successful in keeping the clients in and we've been very honest. And we are for that because when a landlord calls us and says, like, hey, remember that client you might come in and tell us? We know these landlord relationships are crisis. So we're out there working with our clients even after they permanently housed. Make sure they remember this is a new way of life for them. This is a way that you want to maintain your permanence. There are certain expectations to that. Because once you establish your relationship, hopefully that leads to more.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. If we have a client in one of CHUD units for this center, that's not what we're talking about here. To answer your question, there is a client in one of CHUD units that is not following the rules, we don't have much patience for them. We want to tell them because we have very few business stabilization units, and we holding birth. We know that you have high expectations on us to meet certain metrics each year. And we're not going to let a client who isn't being called to use or part of his manager or isn't ready for the program maintain a unit for very long. Now, in terms of permanent housing, we try to the process of the
community. And that's the same case for the voucher as well. It's a good violation. It's very small number. And to Eric's point, too, is that. I don't know, different percentage figure, the overwhelming majority of the West Section and Capture landlords, a lot of them. It was guaranteed then. If there's severe damage, that's probably then to multiple markets. But that's the education to the communities that they need to let them know. While it is a high risk population, the vast majority do not start off because we can move. They're willing to get involved in the family that there's an element of needs to be able.
Is there, I have a question for you, is there for landlords that were housing maybe a whole community of four and they are not part of the that actually the need for vouchers? Are there resources for landlords?
So typically, essentially, voucher is a 10-based voucher, so they take that voucher wherever they want to get it. But now that we're moving to a lot of projects, so there's a certain number of units that are vouchers. It's nice about them, like keeping that stock. So there are resources to do that. Especially in Riverside County, it's an effective tool because we use some of our NYs when it comes to tax credits and state financing, because we don't have high concentrations of transportation portals. So there are options.
We're trying to tap into all the counties.
Yes,
you
did.
Some local ways to help those members.
Joseph.
Yeah. So we are the Section 8 program. How many things are not even marketing that? Just because a lot of times when people hear Section 8, they hear red one. So are we ranking it another way in the voucher program? Because like I said, the term Section 8, that statement.
And we don't do that, and that's more primarily how we do it. We don't really market it because we have a waiting list of So we don't market it. We do market it to the landlord as probably a second especially. Yeah, but we don't really need a second.
Okay.
Please.
Okay.
Good turn.
Kristen.
I'd like to follow up on that. So you're seeing, you can see
location in see that, but state has to go along. Campus communities to buy cash, or the check, or the in whatever income score. So, or especially in our share, but not seeing the same course, the same people of this nation. Enforcement, what you're experiencing.
But it is an issue. We're working with state leaders because it's not easy.
Thank you. And just for the committee, we had a presentation for income single services at the January meeting, and you heard that they have closed from the pandemic their MDL location, which is the only location in the Alameda district. And so, really, the problem is to face so much political activity that I think that's going to be more. And so, I did reach out to me to the big gap. Years, just the barriers that we can't get employees to sign up. I think a few years ago, we were just begging our city committee for landlords to sign up, and so I think this will be a really important program to solve that problem. I'm just wondering about the distribution among the district, because we know in Palm Springs, obviously, rents are not enough for people to get a supplement. We do want to be bigger running people who are homeless, still have community, and we are in our community with their social support network. So just wondering, do you have more range that you might need to approve for additional numbers if there's too big of a gap to stay in case the event is too big?
Take that. I would say at this point, the staff recommendation is a flat number because that is the model other jurisdictions have used. And we appreciate how engaged this community is. So if this is approved by exec and we see that it's working, when we're still facing barriers, we will be the first to come back to you and say this is not enough, or we need to improve disability, or whatever that may be. To your point about finding units everywhere, team lives across the Chino Valley, and it's not uncommon. There are really lots of texts. Hey, there's many homes. Amazing, 4 minutes. So we are definitely looking for pre-stabilization units across the valley, and we're looking for space across the valley. And when we get those projects out, we're housing them out of them. While we're in the last quarter numbers, we're going to see that it's significant in the last numbers. Housing numbers for their lack of. So, but it's a good point, and we'll certainly track that. And if we don't think this is opening up for us as far, we will be
second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? What are you good? Motion carries. Okay, we'll move on to our informational items. We do have the attendance record. Are there any updates from individual members? Thank you so much. Okay, everything else is information on our item. We move on to public comment. We move to the minutes.
So I just want to get the word out. So, Fort Martinez, we're part of a consortium of charity services in Green County and Green County. So, during the anytime you guys are doing outreach for people, if they're identified as Native American, you can refer them to our healthcare system and we provide free healthcare within our nine. We can work on the intake process to verify that they're Native American, but if we can set the pathways to get, because we have a clinic in Fort Martinez, 10,000 square feet, we just built it, we offer a lot of services, but people don't realize that we're there and that we're open to Native American. So if during your guys' intake process, you notice that they're identified as Native American, the number is 770-397-4476 for our TN clinic. These are people of 760-397-4476.
397-4476.
And that's the TN clinic. Like I said, they'll do what they have to do to ensure that they have an organization to get the services, but their own mental and medical, it's free as long as it's a service we provide in our core controls. If it's something that you have to move far out, it may not possibly have to provide your needs to come back us, but it's within. Touching on that, we also have a consortium which slowly does domestic violence. We just doing that recently, so we've been referring people to a consortium who's having the same issues.
As you can tell, this committee does a lot of work in the analysis. Thank you for your patience. We need to do it again.
Thank you.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, please. Identify yourself, please. Give you a couple of minutes. Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Blond Jackson, I'm the executive director of Creative Guild. We're based out of the South Area, Southern California, and we work there with the local. We're expanding to the Coachella Valley. We work around substance misuse prevention, violence prevention, de-escalation, we went to a lot of other things. And we're looking to tap in. We also are the fiscal agent for this another nonprofit. And working with the city of Alameda in Northern California, we provide wraparound services for the unhoused population. Since I've transitioned out here to the Palm Desert, I'm noticing a lot of the issues that major cities are having are taking out here. People come out this way for same issues that there is here. We are here to be a part of the team here to address this week.
Thank you. Mr. Jackson, welcome. And please leave your information and we'll be in contact with you.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome. Anybody else for public? If not, Our next meeting is going to be June 21st, and the executive committee will be held on June 5th. With that, we'll take a bunch of meetings. Second, please. Adjourned.